I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine. She's a very good friend. Her name is Gracie. You might have seen her around here sometimes on the campus because occasionally I get to pet sit her. Well, twice a week, I go and pick Gracie up at her home, and we run through the neighborhood together. There's a trail along the bay that Gracie and I love to frequent. Now, normally, Gracie runs like a champion. She loves to run. But when we pass by the park where owners let their dogs off leash, things start to break down a little. You see, Gracie becomes distracted by the other dogs having fun and chasing frisbees and playfully sniffing each other. And she wants to play too. So her trot slows down and her little furry head keeps glancing over at the park wistfully. And then she looks up at me and I swear I can read her thought bubble. It says, "Father Roger, can't we play too? Can't we go play too?" Well, I gently tug on the leash and I explain to Gracie that we have to keep going. We're not like those other dogs and their humans. We have work to do. Well, she seems to understand and she picks up the pace and together we focus once again on the road ahead. I tell you this because I think humans are a lot like dogs. It's easy to get distracted, right? Forget our purpose and get off track. And that's why we created this series called Focus. It's about helping you and me keep our eye on the ball and focus on what matters most in life, like our faith, our family, and the people around us who need help. The problem is that distractions are everywhere. And every week we've been covering a different distraction. In the first week, we talked about the distraction of wanting more money and possessions. And we said that the answer to that is to intentionally cut back on spending, to declutter and to simplify our lives. In the second week, we talked about leisure and kind of overindulging in life's pleasures. And we said that the antidote to that is to do the opposite of leisure and get up off the couch and serve other people. In the third week, we talked about the distraction of conflict, right? You know, getting sucked into everybody else's drama. What a big time waster that is. And the remedy for that, we said, is to rise above the conflict by keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus. And then last week, we considered the danger of following the crowd, the crowd out there, you know, the fashionable crowd, and forgetting about what matters most to God. And we said that at the end of the day, the in crowd many of us try to emulate may not actually be in after all. So rather than follow the crowd, the best strategy is to keep your God-given purpose, the reason you are on this planet, in the forefront of your mind. And to do that, we suggested that you take some time this week to think about your why, W-H-Y. Like, why are you here right now, at this moment in your life, in this season of your life? Why are you here? Why did God put you on this earth? And if you can articulate that why in just 5 to 7 words, it will help you keep on track and not be pulled off course by the trivial concerns of the crowds all around us seeking our attention. Well, this week, we consider yet another potentially damaging distraction. And this one, as I said at the beginning of Mass, is near and dear to my heart because I tend to struggle with this. This is the distraction I struggle with the most. And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. It's the need for constant applause, the need for praise and affirmation from other people. That's the distraction we're looking at this week. You know, they say that everyone has their 15 minutes of fame, right? Maybe you've already had yours, or maybe you're still waiting. But mine came in the fourth grade, when I was given the lead part in Winnie the Pooh. Yes, I was cast as the lovable Pooh Bear. I mean, you could see it, right? You could see it. And I tell you, a star was born that day. I lapped up the attention like a kitten devouring a bowl of cream. I remember practicing my lines in the mirror endlessly, See, never before had I been the center of attention like that. For the first time, you know, I didn't have to settle for a bit part in the school play. You know, I didn't have to dress up like a rock or a tree or a sunflower. I was no longer fading into the background. Now the spotlight was on me, and I loved it. But then it was over, and I sank back into obscurity. And I got to tell you, it didn't fill me up. It didn't really make me feel better in the long term. In a lot of ways, it left me feeling worse. You see, fame isn't all that it's cracked up to be. The actor Jim Carrey once said, "I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so they can see it's not the answer." Indeed, the love of attention, whether it's being famous or standing up in front of people or other ways of getting attention, that love for attention can be an obsession for some people. And the problem is that trying to find our sense of self-worth in the recognition and approval of other people, it's a fool's errand. Now, obviously, praise is a good thing, right? You should affirm your spouse if you're married. And guys, get that girl a card or something, you know, and write something positive. She will just melt. She'll be putty in your hands, I'll tell you. It's one of the five love languages. And when your kids do something good, praise them, right? Praise is a good thing. At the right time and in the proper dose, praise can motivate us to achieve more, because what gets rewarded gets repeated. But always seeking praise can be a problem. It can cause you to lose focus. And to keep the applause coming, you might compromise your values or spend time on inconsequential things or become someone you're not. The desire for fame or applause or praise, it's nearly universal. According to one study, the most frequently listed life goal of children between the ages of 8 and 12, this is their life goal, is to be famous, to have thousands of followers on social media or go viral on TikTok or YouTube. It's nearly every tween's dream. But lest you think we're just picking on kids, another study found similar results for adults. Over half of survey respondents in a University of Michigan study admitted daydreaming about being famous. And the number one reason, this is the saddest part, the number one reason people daydreamed about being famous is the desire to be valued. There's a lot of people out there who don't feel valued. Now, as I said, personally, I've struggled with this distraction almost my whole life, probably ever since that Winnie the Pooh moment. At 16, I remember thinking I wanted to become a doctor, right? That's a great goal, to become a doctor. And I also dreamed of maybe making some amazing medical discovery that would cure some, you know, terrible disease, which is also a good thing. But if I'm being honest about it, I wasn't just daydreaming about that. I was daydreaming about it because of all the attention I would get if I could do that. And even as a law student at the University of Chicago, I dreamed of one day winning the biggest cases, you know, being on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, having won the case of the century. But not because it would be good for my clients, but also because of the attention I might get. I'm ashamed of this, and I hate to tell you, but even in my early days as a priest, I wanted to be included in every meeting, participate in every ministry, and be consulted in every decision. So much so that I earned the nickname among my friends, Father Very Important, because I wanted to be important. I needed to feel important. Of course, now that I'm a pastor, I am included in every decision and meeting and ministry, and I can tell you that was a huge wake-up call, because now I just pray that someone else will make the decisions and I can go somewhere and find peace and quiet for a change. I went from being Father Very Important to Father, please help me escape. Even today, I will be honest, even today, I still struggle with this distraction sometimes. For example, every week, I look at the number of people watching us on YouTube. Hello, YouTube people. If you're watching, we love you very much. But, and if the number of viewers is high, I feel great. If it's not so high or as high as last week, I feel dejected. By the way, if you are watching from home and you want to lift my spirits a little bit, go ahead and push that big red button on the YouTube page that says subscribe. See, I can't help myself even in the middle of my own homily on not seeking attention and affirmation. It's bad, it's bad. And maybe some of you have, if you're being honest, maybe some of you struggle with this a little bit too. But fortunately, the gospel passage today has a solution for this problem. So let's go over that story. In the story, Jesus went to dine at the home of one of the leading Pharisees. That's a clue right there as to what's coming up. First of all, the Pharisees were a sect of religious leaders in Jesus' day, and they were very well regarded. Very well regarded. And now Jesus is going to the home of one of the leading Pharisees. So you can tell this is going to be a very important event. All the glitterati are going to be there. Dinner parties in that culture, indeed, were important affairs. You may have heard of Greek symposiums. These were highly structured gatherings in ancient Greece. And so the dinner parties in the Jewish tradition were sort of modeled after those symposiums. Where you sat was all important because it reflected your status in the world. And because of that, guests would constantly jockey for position because they didn't know who else was coming, right? They didn't have those RSVP lists. They didn't have those invites where you can see who else is coming. So they thought, maybe I'm the most important person here. So they would take the seat of honor. They would always try to elevate their social position. So much so that Jesus noticed how they were choosing the places of honor at the table. In fact, the guest's attention-seeking behavior was so obvious that Jesus just had to say something about it. And here's what he said. He said, when you're invited to a dinner party, a wedding banquet, whatever, don't recline at table. Now, let me stop there. You may wonder, what does that mean, recline at table? You see, in his day, you didn't have a dining room table and chairs like we do. You had a low-lying table just off the floor, and you would literally recline on your side, and you stretch your feet out away from the table, and you'd put your right elbow up on the table, and then you would eat with your left hand. I can't imagine that was very comfortable, but that's what they did. So anyway, he says, do not recline at table in the place of honor. Or you might be embarrassed when the host asks you to make room and move to a lower position because someone else came who was of higher position that you didn't know about, right? So he says, don't do that. Practical advice. Rather, he says, when you're invited, go and take the lowest place so that when the host comes to you, he may say, my friend, move up to a higher position. Then you will enjoy the esteem of your companions at the table. But Jesus didn't stop there. He then turned his attention to the host and he said, when you hold a lunch or a dinner, don't invite dignitaries and VIPs. Rather, when you hold a banquet, invite the poor and the marginalized, people who can't repay you. You see, both the host and the guests at that party made some critical errors in judgment because they were trying to get applause and recognition from other people. The host tried to upgrade his social standing by inviting the celebrities of his day, and the guests sought the praise of others by attempting to sit in the most important places. In both cases, Jesus offered some important advice, and I'm paraphrasing here, don't seek applause from others. Here's exactly what he said. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. The distraction of applause, it's dangerous for many reasons, as we've said, but the most dangerous one is because it reflects a desire to exalt ourselves. And because that desire may very, and it's bad because that desire may very well keep us from where we really want to go, both in this life and in the one to come. So, what's the solution to this distraction of applause? Well, Jesus says it right there in the gospel passage. The solution is humility. It's giving, not seeking applause. It's giving, not seeking affirmation. It's giving, not seeking praise. The best way to keep your desire for admiration and praise from getting out of hand is to become a cheerleader for other people. You know, when Jesus told the guests at that party to let others have the best places at the table and the dinner host to invite those who could not repay him, he was essentially telling them to lift others up. Lift them up. Seek the applause of others instead of themselves. Now, one good way to do that is to redirect praise. Like if you're praised by someone, you could say something like, hey, it was a team effort, you know, or we all pitched in, or I really have to thank so-and-so. As the first reading says, conduct your affairs with humility, and you will be loved more than a giver of gifts. In the late 1800s, there was a cardinal in the Catholic Church. You've probably never heard of him. I hadn't either. His name was Rafael Mary Del Val. But he wrote a prayer about humility that ironically has become famous. And for a cardinal, you got to put yourselves in the shoes of a cardinal, right? A cardinal or a bishop or an archbishop, wherever they go, whenever they walk into a room, you know, people revere them, they applaud them, or they tell them how great they are, even if they don't really think so. And so for him to write a prayer about humility is obviously remarkable in itself. Now, it's an intense prayer, but it's something I think you'll remember it. And so what I'd like to do is pray part of it with you today, right now. So you could either close your eyes or just, you know, kind of meditate with me and pray along with me. Lord Jesus, meek and humble of heart, deliver me from the desire of being esteemed, from the desire of being loved, from the desire of being honored, from the desire of being praised, from the desire of being preferred to others, from the desire of being consulted, from the desire of being approved. Deliver me also from the fear of being humiliated, from the fear of being despised, from the fear of being forgotten, from the fear of being ridiculed, from the fear of being wronged. Jesus, grant me the grace to desire that others may be loved more than I, that others may be esteemed more than I, that in the opinion of the world, others may increase and I may decrease. Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. Amen. As I said, it's an intense prayer. And I think humility today often gets translated as, you know, just don't brag about yourself, right? We all think we're humble, right? I mean, I think I'm the most humble person I know, to be honest with you. But actually, humility goes much deeper than that. It goes sometimes to wanting others to succeed, even if it means you might not. That prayer doesn't let any of us hide from our inner pride, from our secret unspoken desire for approval. Well, I want to conclude with an uplifting story that I ran across. A few years ago, something unexpected happened on a Virgin Atlantic international flight from London to New York. It was something good. A well-to-do young man named Jack and an 88-year-old former nurse recovering from knee surgery made friends in the Heathrow Airport terminal while waiting for their flight. When they boarded, Violet took her economy seat in the last row of the enormous aircraft. Jack, on the other hand, had first-class tickets. But then came the unimaginable. Jack walked down the long aisle and brought Violet up front and gave her his seat in first class, while he walked to the back and took Violet's place. He said nothing to the flight attendants or anyone else. He didn't ask for praise or recognition. He just quietly did it. Later, one of the flight attendants who got wind of it posted on social media that of the hundreds of flights she's been on, she's had the pleasure of looking after famous athletes, supermodels, and movie stars. But none of them, she said, melted her heart like Jack and Violet. In a world of celebrities and attention seekers, I think Jesus would have been proud of that young man. And I think we should give him a round of applause.